I like replayed through the official broadcast, and I got immediately annoyed because while Ding is thinking, all the chat comments are saying that he's going to flag or that he's going to like lose like a little baby. Ironically, his win previously was against Gukesh with the black pieces. And kind of a similar game to this, like basically he got a good position out of the opening and then he won. If you get off to a bad start, yeah, maybe your emotions just totally flip. For Ding, it was very important. He gets off to a good start. For Gukesh, of course, it's not good. But I guess he has the mentality that this shouldn't affect him.
Good morning, Fabiano. Early morning here in St. Louis, Missouri. But it was an early morning in Singapore where the World Chess Championship match just started today. Ding versus Gukesh. Obviously, we've been discussing this for the last few weeks, few months, this whole year, basically. We've been discussing it since we knew that Gukesh is going to be the challenger. Obviously, a lot of people have been touting him as the clear favorite. But today, Ding showed up to play. Fabi, the story. Tell us the story of round one.
Yeah, well, so the first thing is that the game started really early for us here in the US, right? So
3
I
a.m.
only saw this story when I
3 a.m.,
woke up.
yes.
So I and also I woke up not too long ago. So yeah, I even saw some messages on my phone, some very unclear messages, some like ding and then surprised emoji. And I don't know what that means. Did he lose like horribly? Did he win? Well, it turns out that he did win, and it was a very good game from his point of view, and not such a good game from Gukesh's point of view. And of course, it's also a surprise to everyone. Well, not to everyone, perhaps, but to most people, or maybe even to everyone, because winning with black pieces in the first round against one of the best players in the world is not easy.
Has to be to everyone, right? I mean,
Yeah,
again.
it's it. At least it's a small surprise. I mean, it's not impossible that Ding wins with the black pieces, but you would definitely think that for Ding going into the game today, a draw is a fine result. There's nothing wrong with the draw
Of course.
whatsoever. I mean, he's playing with black first round. There's always some nerves, but of course the nerves are also for Gukesh, and it was a very nervy game from his point of view. It almost seemed, yeah, like he wasn't his usual self. If you look at the game, because he wasn't stable at all. He was, I mean, he played aggressively,
You
but not in a
remember
controlled manner.
the first game from the 2018 World Championship match. It's a completely different experience from anything else, any other chess game you will play in your chess career. The first World Championship game that you play, it's special. Now, do you remember and can you visualize the nerves and describe the nerves that you've had going into that game?
Yeah, I actually can remember this very, like, this is the feeling I remember the best from the match against Magnus. I remember the first like 10 minutes of the first game better than any other moment in the match, pretty much. Which maybe it sounds weird because the first 10 minutes are the least significant, right? But it's the most nervous you are, I guess, until perhaps the very end. But basically, like at some point you adjust during the match, but the first 10 minutes you're not in that adjustment period anymore. You're completely exposed to the new circumstances, and those circumstances are, of course, you've been exposed to pressure before. You know, Gukesh has seen plenty of pressure. Ding has seen even more since he's older and more experienced. But Gukesh is no stranger to pressure. He's played the candidates. He's played the Olympiad. He's played a lot of tournaments that to the everyday person would be like you haven't felt that kind of those kind of stakes before, right? But for Gukesh it's pretty normal, and for every other top player. But then you play the World Championship match, and it's more or less like if you put a 2500 in the candidates for the first time. That's kind of what you feel like. It's like, what am I, you know, I haven't seen this before, right? It's not because who you're playing against is someone new to you or someone you've never a level that you've never faced before. It's not because of your opponent. It's just because you suddenly realize the gravity of the situation. You're now playing a world championship match. It's against one opponent. You have to beat one person. You're the world champion. You're in the history books, so on and so forth.
I need to ask you on top of that, the environment is also extremely different than anything else. You're playing in that fishbowl type of environment. You cannot see anybody from the outside. It's like you're stepping in and then the whole world disappears behind you, right? You have the arbiters and maybe you have a couple more volunteers and the anti-cheating department and whatnot, but you don't have anybody else. How is that feeling when you first step in that fishbowl?
Yeah, well, I think the one thing that I remember the most was the amount of cameras. It was just me and Magnus, and yeah, as you mentioned, the arbiters, and there was even Woody Harrelson, who was making the ceremonial first move. But what you remember is the cameras. There are like 40 cameras around you, all sorts. There's like the professional, like the big cameras, the film crew, and then there's the every journalist that can get in with trying to take a
It
photo.
was a bit different this time. You saw that, right?
Well, I haven't seen anything
So
besides the
it was a
game. I
bit
haven't.
different. No cameras allowed around the players.
Even before the game starts?
Around the players, no. The cameras were a bit outside of the playing view. Like you could not even
Okay.
see them on the camera, which is quite surprising because, as you just mentioned, generally you have all the photographers surrounding you at that point. In this case, it was just Maurice. It was very funny, actually. At the beginning is Maurice who introduces the players. And they come just like let's say a UFC fight. First you announce the challenger Gukesh, then he announces the champion. It almost felt like he was in the role of Bruce Buffer, if you know who that guy is. But it was quite a different experience than what I've seen before in World Championship matches.
Yeah, that's well, I mean, that's a bit more pleasant for the players for sure. But yeah, when I played, it was different. They were around us. They were surrounding us.
And
You can maybe see photos, but
there's
my
photos of
memory is
that.
basically like I am being surrounded by a ton of people.
Cool.
But yeah, so when it comes to the actual game, it was interesting from many points of view as well.
Let's
Should we get into the moves?
get into it. Yes.
Okay, so Gukesh is playing with the white pieces in the first round, Ding with the black pieces, and Gukesh plays e4. Not really a surprise. By the way, I'm going to be looking also to my left because I have some notes about the game I was analyzing, but this morning.
We're not going to
So
accuse
Gukesh
you of
plays
anything.
e4,
Yes.
and this is not a surprise. Of course, we don't have to get into the first few moves too much, but e4 is basically considered the most critical move in terms of modern theory, right? People play e4 because d4 it's harder to find ways to test the opponent. Ding plays the French, also not a surprise whatsoever, to my mind, for a few reasons. One, because the French is probably in the best state in chess history that's ever been. It's a great opening. Two, because Ding is working with Rapport, which by the way was a great decision on his part to continue working with Ritchie for this match. And Ding has played the French in the last World Championship against Dion. And Rapport is a very, very knowledgeable and good French player. So the French, not a surprise. D4, D5, Knight C3. Again, there was a choice here, but Knight C3, not a surprise. It's the main move these days. Ding plays Knight F6. Also not a surprise. It's the best move. There is the win hour. Also not bad, but Knight F6 is a bit more stable.
The win hour is bishop to b4, yes.
Yeah, e5 now. Again, not a surprise, a critical move, although bishop g5 is possible. Knight f to d7. And here, the first kind of big choice where Gukesh has a kind of fundamental decision to play f4, followed by knight f3, or to play this move, knight c to e2, which he did play, which I played recently. And I also played something really weird against Levon recently. But okay, knight c2 is one of the main moves. Knight c2. C5, C3, knight C6.
It was a little bit different. He started with F4, in fact.
Oh, sorry.
He did
We
start with
got.
F4, C5, and now Knight C2.
Yeah, which I guess transposes.
And you've been playing this. You've played it at the US Championships. You've been tested in the French quite a lot with great results from the white side. And you've played something similar, didn't you?
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, if I wonder why he started with F4. Actually, like, I didn't realize that this was also a fine move order because, like, normally white plays knight c2 on move 5, c5, c3, and then can, after knight c6, choose between either f4 or knight f3. I played knight f3 against Mishra. F4 is the main move, which would transpose to our game today. But yeah, you could start with f4, c5, knight c2 first. I just don't know exactly what you're avoiding with Gukesh's move order. Maybe there's something, but
And Gukesh seemed to be still in his preparation at this point. Like the French most likely did not surprise him as much.
yeah, no, of course it's one of the openings they would consider. It's also like one of the main openings in modern theory. I mean, the French is just really good, and also because it limits white so much in terms of your choice on move three, like you can either play kind of e5 for the advance or knight c3. I mean, the Tarrasch with knight d2 is not really considered an option these days to fight for an advantage, and the exchange French is just the exchange French.
Yes.
So you're very limited in your options with white, which means that black can prepare the French very easily. It's not like, you play e4, e5, you have to contend with the Italian, for example, which is huge,
Yeah.
and then the Ruy Lopez, which is huge. So you have a Here it's kind of more direct, more forcing. The French is in that way sort of an opening to try to narrow the direction in which your opponent can choose their options.
I like it, even though I'm a big French hater, but I like the way you explain it.
I think it's
92,
a great opening. Okay.
Knight C6, C3, and A5.
Yeah, so we could have gotten this from the other move order. Which is actually, I just made those moves in randomly because I thought that that's the normal move order. I didn't even pay attention to how we got there. Now, A5. So this is a kind of the first choice from Ding's point of view, besides the first move, the French. Here, after C3, Black has a choice. I don't know if you remember, but you prepared this for me twice, this
Yes,
opening.
yes.
First in Vigenze in 2023, and then in Norway Chess in 2023. And the main move is usually considered that Black plays bishop to e7 on move 7. This is standard. The plan is bishop e7, then you castle.
Yeah, so let's say knight
And
f3 castle,
yeah,
bishop
bishop e7,
e3.
knight f3, castle. I mean, White has a lot of moves here, but let's say bishop to e3. And then you kind of play this f6, queen b6 stuff in some order. I think the exact move order is after bishop d3, you play f6, and then you play queen b6 next.
Yes, g3, queen b6.
Yeah, g3, queen b6, and then white has a choice, black has a choice, so on and so forth. It's a one of those very, very messy positions, which it's one probably one of the most complicated types of positions that I've analyzed and played. Not just this type, but not just this exact position, but similar ones in the French. For example, you can see my game against Magnus from Norway Chess 2023. Or whenever I analyze it, I always feel like you're in some kind of forest where everything is always hanging. Like both white central pawns are hanging, and then there's always sacrifices on e5. There's always you have to always consider after cd4 that white has like three different ways to recapture. And it's just a mess. It's so difficult to calculate, to analyze as well. Computers also struggle to give you like a clear understanding of the position. But Ding decided not to go for this, let's say, quote unquote, main line. He played A5, which is kind of the computer's first line if you're using a strong engine. So
And by the way,
it,
A5 was
A5.
played, at least according to what I'm seeing here. I did not see the game live. He spent about close to 30 minutes on this move.
Yeah, Ding was thinking for half an hour. I like replayed through the official broadcast, and I got immediately annoyed because while Ding is thinking, All the chat comments are saying that he's going to flag or that he's going to like lose like a little baby,
Or maybe Ding
things
Chun.
like that. Yeah, which of course you can't draw any conclusions on move seven. You just can't. I mean, okay, if Ding thought for an hour and a half, I understand that's probably a bad sign. But I from my own experience, when I've played and then my opponent thinks for a lot of time in the opening, I don't even like feel good about it anymore. Because it usually means that they're going to play very well from now on. It's sort of also a way to like mentally get yourself in the game.
Yes.
Like you want your head in the game, and if you play very quickly, you can get into the blitz mode, which you don't want in the classical game.
Yes.
So I also don't think that Ding was out of prep.
He was
I mean,
probably
I
just
don't.
trying to remember his theory or maybe choose his line. Perhaps he prepared both bishop e7 and this a5, and seeing that Gyökeres was more or less blitzing out his moves, anticipating perhaps that he knows very well the main lines, he decided to go for this, what is considered, let's say, a bit of a sideline, still a very principled move.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking too. Like, I don't know exactly what his thought process was, but it is completely inconceivable that Ding plays the French and is not ready for what is essentially like one of two main lines. I mean, basically, if you play the French, you prepare the advanced variation, you prepare like the knight c3, knight f6 lines where white plays f4, knight f3 without knight e2, and then you prepare this as your third option. Like that's the order of those are the three most important things to prepare. And then you start to go through the other sidelines. But there's no way that you ignore this. It is one of the main lines in French theory. And A5 is one of the main moves. So Ding was just thinking about the position, trying maybe to decide or to recall the details, but he was not out of his prep.
Yes. Knight
Gyökeres
f3
plays instantly. Knight
and
f3.
a4, followed
A4,
quite
which is the
quickly.
consequential next idea of A5, of course. You're gaining space.
Yes.
You are not only preparing somewhere A3, but it's also just gaining space in itself is useful. And you're also preparing Queen A5 very often, one of the main ideas for Black. Bishop to E3 played instantly, and Bishop to E7. I think Ding also played this one quite quickly, yeah, within like a minute, which is the main move. At this point, Black has gained space and is now ready to continue with normal development. And here Gyökeres played a move very quickly, which is also in some ways a weird move. And I'm trying to understand a little bit about was this preparation? I assume it has to be because he played the speed at which he played it, which was basically without thinking, like he just played a tempo. On the other hand, it's also a weird move to prepare because I mean, it's not like objectively a bad move. But it's a move which is very double-edged, very risky, and Black has many, many options. So that move he played is g4. Of course, it's weird on its surface. You have other moves, right? For example, you can play knight to g3, which just tries to get your pieces out quickly, knight g3, bishop d3, so on. After which, Black can respond with f5, which is how Black in general is not opposed to making this move in some circumstances because it shuts down white's play. With a knight on g3, it's especially good because white can no longer easily get g4 break in. And the other option for white is, well, actually, there's a few more. There's like d takes c5, but I understand not wanting to do this. But I'll just mention the move dc5 because this explains also a reason why I think that Ding knew the position quite decently. And I'll just go through it very briefly. So after dc5 on move 10,
Yes.
you would expect that Black might just play knight takes c5, right?
Yes.
But then knight to g3, and it's not clear if the knight on c5 is so well placed. That's why the computer gives an option here to play queen to a5 as one of the main moves. And the re purpose of queen a5 is that you are waiting to see which piece you will capture on c5 in the future. So, for example, if knight to g3, now there's bishop takes c5. So I want to trade bishops now. And you kind of keep it a bit flexible. If knight e to d4, now you play knight takes c5 because the e4 square is open for the knight. So it's just kind of one of those useful semi-waiting moves. And For me, that explains why after g4, Ding was tempted to play what he played, which was queen to a5. Because when you have this idea in your head, then you might think, oh, if it's good after knight g3, maybe it's also good after after g4.
You follow through with that,
Now,
yes.
I don't know if it was the best. I mean, it's kind of hard to say what's the best move because there are many equivalent moves. But what I would prepare with black, if I were to prepare this line now, would probably be to play castle instead of queen a5. And then white's idea of g4, the only way to make sense of it, because black is ready now to play f6 and just to break open the center, is you have to play g5. And after g5, white has effectively killed all of black's f6 ideas because you really don't want to open the g file for white's attack, right? So g5 just kills the whole f6 idea. But black can continue with b5, which is also standard. And black is just preparing b4 and trying to break on the queen side. And we have a typical kind of, you could call it like a, it's not really a pawn race, but it's similar almost to like a dragon where one side attacks on the king side, one attacks on the queen side. All of white's plays on the queen side, all of white's plays on the king side, all of black's plays on the queen side. The battle lines are very clearly drawn. And so after b5, it's very complicated. For example, white should play a3 to stop or try to dissuade b4. And then black has a huge choice of moves. And this is why I'm a bit confused about Gyokeshe's prep, because black can make like five, six moves, all of which the computer says are bordering between the tiniest bit better for black, like minus 0.1, which is basically equal, and equal. But black doesn't have really bad options here. So it's a very healthy position for black. For example, you can play b4, which sacrifices the a4 pawn. It's one good option. You can play knight to a5, followed by knight b3, and then the other knight comes to c4, so you just start bringing all your pieces. You can play bishop to a6. It's really a rich position for black. But perhaps this is Gyokeshe's prep. He knew something about the position. He was ready for a very tough fight. In any case, Ding avoids all this by playing queen to a5. And here, after queen to a5, Gyokeshe plays bishop to g2, which is, I won't say it's a questionable decision. It's maybe not the best move, but the position is so complicated, it's really hard to say. And it's not like white has a clearly good option here. I mean, I thought a3 is very natural to stop any a3 ideas. But, then black can play f6, for example, and the mess continues. Everything's hanging, all the pawns are hanging in the center. I don't really know exactly what is going on, but the computer shows 0.00, whatever that means to you. Instead, Gyokeshe plays bishop g2. And here, Ding makes perhaps a questionable decision. But again, I'm not going to be critical because, first of all, it's not really a bad move. And it's also a very, very complicated position. So it's hard to, all these numbers that the computer shows, they're not really meaningful. Now, perhaps like the best move was b5, for example, just trying to prepare b4, a very logical move, which the computer likes. And which is also logical because you're preparing bishop to a6 in many cases. And by white having played bishop g2, you kind of abandon that diagonal, which is potentially very useful for black. So b5, b4, bishop a6, all sorts of ideas like that. But instead, Ding plays a3, which forces b3. Of course, white cannot allow the destruction of the pawn structure with b takes a3. So b3. CD4, and here Gyokeshe makes a good move, but a very easy one because you don't really have good alternatives. And the move he played is B4. The reason why he plays B4 is because he wants to capture with knight on E2. But if he does that immediately, of course, it drops the C3 pawn. And if he captures with the knight on F3, then it allows bishop to H4, and this disrupts white's development. So now you don't want to move your king, of course, but after bishop to F2, bishop takes f2, king f2, your king is still in a not very good place. And then black has g5. Very standard French idea, right? Just breaking the center open. And now e5 is very weak. It looks weird to play g5, but it's super typical because your king on e8 is safe. You don't really need to castle so much. You just want to get the center. So you undermine the f4 pawn, you get the e5 pawn. So Gyokeshe, b4. Good move, of course. But I think they both knew that this move was coming. And I'll just check, but I assume he played it quickly. Yeah, within 5 minutes. Okay. So yeah, G5, this would be quite good for black, and that's why Gyokeshe went for B4, which is a good move. But not a surprising one. And I think that he played it quite quickly. Both players pretty much expected that this is what would happen. So b4, queen to c7, queen drops back to an active square. Knight e takes d4. And now Ding plays a nice move, which I don't think is super easy. I think it's a difficult position, and he did play a very, very decent move right now, which is knight to b6, because he could have taken on d4. But then the problem with that is that after queen takes d4, he can no longer get his knight to b6 so easily. And that's why he played knight b6 immediately. So the knight is going to c4, where it's an excellent piece, and it also goes there with gain of tempo, because the bishop on e3 is going to be attacked. Now, Gukesh plays castle, I think a fine move, and the most natural move. The computer kind of likes one option here, which is to first play knight b5, which forces queen d8, of course. The queen has nowhere else that he can stay in contact with the knight on b6. And then to play this really weird move, bishop to f1, which just prevents knight c4, because black does not want to allow this trade. The pawn on d5 is much better than it would be on c4. And this would be quite challenging for Ding, I think. It's also very artificial, of course, to take so much time. You play bishop g2, you play bishop f1 back just to stop knight c4. You're spending all this time and keeping your king in the center. But it is, in some ways, very logical. It's not a big deal for black, but it is challenging in the sense that if black plays, for example, castle, white continues with g5, an idea we already saw. And now black is kind of stuck out of ideas. Knight c4 is not a good idea. F6 is not a good idea because you don't want to open the king side. So what are you left with? A move like bishop d7, but it's a bit vague. It's perhaps not very useful. Or you can at some point play d4. You can do that after castle g5, or you can do it after bishop f1 immediately. D4, knight fd4, knight d5. So you sack a pawn, you get bishop h4 ideas, you attack the bishop on e3, f4 is weak. There's all sorts of compensation you get for having made this pawn sacrifice, but it is a pawn sacrifice. It is still rather testing. So this would have been interesting also for Gukesh, but not. It's not like this was a clearly better option. Again, it's one of those positions where it's so complicated and so many moves are more or less equivalent in terms of evaluation that it's really hard to find moves that are clearly better than one another. In any case, Gukesh makes a move that I would have probably made myself, which is castle. You just get your king to safety, but you do allow knight c4, and you drop the bishop back to f2. So move 16, bishop f2. White has developed all their pieces and has control over the d4 square. On the other hand, black is also reasonably developed and has a knight on c4. And now Ding makes a nice move, bishop d7, which I think is also quite important because it can be very logical to castle. But it's actually better to get your play going with bishop d7 immediately. So castle, although it's not like a terrible, terrible move, it would be a bit of an inaccuracy, and white would be able to get some advantage here with, for example, the move knight to d2, trading off the knight on c4. And we'll see why the bishop is better on d7, why this is kind of a subtle difference, but why it's more useful to play bishop d7 first. So here Gukesh played queen to e2. I actually kind of prefer a different move here. Again, it's not like queen e2 is a bad move, but and it's even the most natural move, and the computers say it's fine and everything. But I kind of like the move knight to d2 more because it's a bit more direct. And I think in this type of position, it can be helpful to go for directness rather than some kind of non-concrete moves, and then you're moving, you're maneuvering around, and you can lose direction very easily. So knight to d2. Black has nothing better than trading all the knights in whatever order you want. For example, knight takes d2, queen takes d2, knight takes d4, bishop takes d4. And here it's very important for black to play h5. Because basically, in this position after bishop takes d4, black does no longer really has meaningful play on the queen side. Because you don't have a knight on c4, you have no pawns you can attack, c3 is defended, b4 is defended, so on and so forth. And white is ready to play f5 at some moment. So you have to now break up white's kingside formation a little bit with h5. And this is why it was more useful to delay castling, because now your rook on h8 supports h5. If gh5, rook h5, that's not really what white wants. And after h5, white should play g5 to keep the kingside closed and keep the king safe. And then black can either play g6, which closes down the kingside completely and leads to more probably an equal position, or can play bishop b5 first, attacking the rook, trying to get the bishop active before playing g6. But this also allows, for example, f5, an exchange sacrifice. Bishop f1, Rook F1, E takes F5, and we have some sort of mess. Because although White is down in exchange, White has a really powerful bishop, and Black doesn't really have much counterplay. You see the rooks on H8, A8, they don't actually do very much. So the computer still says same evaluation 0.00. White has like five different moves that lead to that evaluation. For example, bishop d5. And this would be also a complete mess, but very interesting. And I think this would be more testing for Deng if Gukesh had gone for it. Although, again, not criticizing Gukesh's move because queen e2, not a bad move by any means. And here, Deng continues to play excellently. I think like his play from, let's say, the moment after move 14, knight b6, up until nearly the end of the game, until he got a winning position, was basically flawless. So he plays move knight takes d4. This is a good moment to do so. And Gukesh responds with knight takes d4. It's an interesting moment also for Gukesh. But if the reason he didn't want to play bishop d4 was because black can play h5. And if white is forced to play g5, g6, then it's very unclear where white's play is on the king side. On the other hand, the bishop on d4 is much more solid than the knight on d4. So this would have been a safer choice for Gukesh as well, because he keeps the queen side pawn structure completely intact. Instead, he went for knight takes d4, which is a more ambitious move. Now h5 is no longer an option because g takes h5 simply, black cannot recapture that pawn. So, and without being able to recapture that pawn, you can't really justify giving up a pawn like that. But Ding plays another excellent move, knight to b2. Now, I wouldn't say this is a difficult move, but it is still an excellent move, and we have to give credit where credit's due. The move attacks the c3 pawn, one idea, but also opens up ideas of queen c4, as we'll see. And the d3 square is actually one of Black's targets. So knight to b2. Here, Gukesh had a difficult choice of more or less equivalent moves. He went for queen to e3, but I think that maybe queen to f3 was a bit better. I think this is where Gukesh's play, although everything he did before this, it's really hard to be critical of. At this point, I think we can start to be critical of some of his decisions. Maybe not this one in particular, but the kind of flow of the game from this moment on until like the next three, four, five moves. This is where it all went wrong for Gukesh.
Why is the queen
I like queen
better
to f3.
on f3?
Yeah, I think that the queen on f3 is perhaps better for one just very simple reason, which is that we want to stop h5. We want to keep the queen on f3 so that h5 can always be met with gh5 and the pawn on h5. That square is defended by white. So queen to f3 would definitely be met by rook to c8. And here, rook f to c1, not rook a c1, allowing queen c4. We'll see this theme in the game as well. But rook f to c1. So now queen c4 is no longer an idea because the queen can always get kicked back with bishop to f1. And h5 is no longer an idea. And if black castles, then we have the typical g5, stopping any f6 ideas. So we see all these ideas come together where white's play is basically just trying to control the game, trying to limit counterplay. And after rook f to c1, the engine says it's still about equal with various moves, but I think one of the moves that the computer likes, which is g6, is not an easy one. I think that most people would castle, but perhaps g6, basically keeping up the option, keeping open the option of h5, keeping the rook on h8 is perhaps a bit better. And then white can also play f5, white can play queen to h3, preparing f5. It's again, it's the same evaluation, 0.00. It's basically been that the whole game. But I think black's play is not super easy here. Now, queen to e3 is not a bad move either. Ding responds with rook to c8, attacking the c3 pawn again, and giving white a choice of three ways to defend the pawn. Now, rook f to c1 is logical because it stops queen c4 ideas. But now after h5, the queen on, not being on f3, and also white's rooks being not perfectly placed. I mean, rook on c1 and a1, the rook on a1 is not doing very much, just defending the a2 pawn. White can no longer play gh5 because rook h5. And so white should probably play g5 here. And then black plays g6, follows it up with castle short, and white is a little bit out of ideas. On the other hand, black is also a little bit out of ideas. White is very solid. So certainly black is doing fine here, but I wouldn't say black is better. It's one of those kind of positions where probably both sides struggle to make meaningful progress.
Looks like somewhat of a, I don't know if you can put it this way, mutual fortress, more or less.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, you could say a mutual fortress. I mean, It's hard to call it a fortress, of course, with so many pieces on the board, c3 being weak, but c3 is the only weakness in white's camp. Black has no real weaknesses. White only has one potential pawn break, which is f5, and that's very difficult to achieve. So you can easily see that both sides struggle to make counterplay, and even a draw could happen for that reason. Now, the move I like better is to play bishop to e1. It's basically the same idea. You
At
want
what
to
point?
protect c3 without allowing queen to c4, attacking a2, but still h5 is an idea. And then here it gives an extra option for white because there's also queen to h3, some kind of mess. Or you could just play g5 after h5 and then g6. And the difference is that the rook on f1 is better than c1. White can play rook to f3, for example, followed by bishop to f1. And again, we're in that kind of similar situation, but maybe a tiny bit better version. Compared to rook fc1, because the rook on f3 is just pretty decently placed, and white now overprotects the c3 pawn. So those were two good options. Now, the move Gukesh played, this is the first moment in the game that I will be quite critical. It is a very poor move, and it's a careless move. It's kind of obvious if you start to think about the position that it's a poor move, I think. Everything before this was very vague. But this one just has a clear kind of logic. You should not play this move because it weakens the a2 pawn. Rook a to c1. Ding meets it with queen to c4. Not only attacking a2, but also, very importantly, queen to d3 ideas. And now you cannot play bishop to f1. So the queen gets to c4, and white cannot really do anything to kick queen out. That's why rook ac1 was a poor move. And I really don't know why Gukesh went for it, because it's clear that queen c4 is the idea for black. There's no other reasonable ideas. It's the first move you calculate, and after calculating it, I think you realize that the queen coming to d3 is not really in white's favor. You don't want to be invaded by black's pieces.
Could it be that he banked everything on the attack coming on the king side via f5 and just decided to leave the rook on f1 for that reason?
Yeah, I think for sure he considered queen c4 and he had f5 in mind. I'll just look at the time spending. So rook a to
He actually
c1.
played it quite quickly, less than 2 minutes, at least according to the official broadcast.
Yeah, maybe he played it quite quickly, but and probably it was his idea. It's like very consequential, kind of where you play rook a c1, you play f5. But this is not a position where white really has an attack. And the reason why is because black has so much counterplay connected with queen d3. So f5. Ding plays queen d3. If you take the pawn a2, then rook to a1 comes, and yeah, you don't actually regain the pawn. White regains the pawn, so you don't actually win a pawn, and that's not in black's favor because the pawn on a3 and a the pawns on a3 and a2 are actually a long-term asset for black. The pawn a2 is a weakness. It's not maybe a weakness at the moment, like it shouldn't be captured, but at some point it will become a weakness, and we'll actually see that at some point this pawn will be hanging. So queen to d3 again, excellent move, but very, very obvious one. I mean, queen d3 is what you play. And the point is that if, for example, white takes on d3, knight to e3, you see now that in the end game, all of white's pawns fall apart, and black's king will not be in any danger. So e5 is hanging, pawn rook on c1 is attacked, so on and so forth. So of course, white cannot capture, but also if white captures on e6, I mean, fe6, fe6, you didn't actually achieve anything. And the move f5 did weaken the e5 pawn. So you have a potential, like right now, the threat is queen e3 followed by knight d3. You have a potential where the e5 pawn is just hanging. So queen d3, Gukesh, maybe at this point he realized that queen f4, which maybe he was counting on, is met by g5, which is really, really powerful because the queen is attacked. If it goes back, you trade queens anyway, and e5 again becomes very weak. And endgames are in general just good for black because white has more weaknesses. And f takes g6. I mean, you could even meet it with different recaptures, but queen g6 is just very good because now bishop g5 is a threat, and also h5 and so on. Knight d3, I mean, just everything is a threat now. So maybe he was counting on queen to f4, but I don't think g5 is a difficult move. It's just kind of like black is just forcing matters. It's, I first attack your queen on d3, it goes to f4, I attack it on f4. Now the best move for white to stay in the game here, basically the only move not to lose at this point, is a really difficult move, which is g5. It's just a really difficult move. I mean, I have no other way to say it. The point is that in the end game, after like queen takes e3, bishop takes e3, knight to d3, which is maybe where everyone would even stop thinking about this, rook to c to d1. Now, if knight takes e5, you have bishop to f4. And if rook takes c3, fe6, fe6, knight e2. I mean, it's not even clear why g5 is important in some of these lines, but
Wait,
it
just
just
one
is
second.
somewhere.
After rook to d1, you don't take on e5? Knight takes e5.
Well, so I'll basically see, like, I actually don't know exactly why white is okay here. And so the computer just straight up says minus 0.44. Again, it's not a very helpful evaluation. Knight takes e5 to me, or rook takes e3 would be the first moves that I consider, right? Now, knight e5, the computer says bishop to f4, attacking the knight, okay. And then if knight to c6, then knight to b5, and at some point, white is getting counterplay. I think maybe the idea of g5 is that after e5 here, there's f6, gf6, gf6, just continuing to like try to gain tempi because bishop f6 is met by knight d6. So maybe you just continue to gain time based on g5 move. It goes without saying that playing g5 on move 22 because you see f6 in endgame where white is a pawn down
It's
is completely
ridiculous.
impossible to consider. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And it weakens everything, right? Like, sure, you don't have a very healthy pawn structure, but at least with a pawn on g4, you only have the e5 weakness. After you play g5, f5 is hanging, e5, g5 is also a weakness later on. So it's a very committal move that,
Yeah.
it doesn't make any sense if you don't see the follow-up.
Yeah, I think the point is basically that the f5 pawn can never really be a weakness because e5 always is favorable for white. Like it's just always a good thing for that if black takes, because the good thing about black's position is that the structure is super, super stable and intact, and white would like at any costs to cause a change in black's pawn structure. And basically at any cost, if you at any moment undermine the d5 pawn, this is great. Now, knight d3, rook cd1, knight e5 is probably equal. Rook takes c3 is met by knight e2, by fe6, fe6, knight e2, which again leads to something very concrete. Rook c2, rook takes d3, rook takes e2, rook takes a3, and white regains the pawn and gets some counterplay with rook a8. Now, yeah, this stuff is just too difficult. But that's why I'm not critical about this moment after queen d3. It's really this like rook a to c1 move that was just such a poor decision. Even like the computer might not show rook a c1 as like this terrible move because it's the difference between, let's say, zeros and minus 0.3. It's not that much, right? Or even minus 0.2. But you understand that this is the moment where it went wrong for white. Because before that, the position was just difficult for both sides. After rook a to c1, it's only difficult for one side. Ding has all the play. So after queen d3, Gukesh would have had to dig really deep to stay in the game, but he was not able to find g5, which, by the way, after g5, the computer still hates white's position, but it's because of this move g6, which is also very tough. I mean, I think probably after g5, most people take on e3 and go for the e5 pawn. But if you're an engine, then you can play g6 and fe6, fe6, bishop h3 attacks the e6 pawn, another point of g5. And then the computer just castles and gives up the e6 pawn. So it's really tough now for both sides if both sides are playing perfectly. But Gukesh did not find g5. I think basically, I don't know who would find g5. Maybe some people would find it, but you would only find it out of desperation. And instead, Gukesh plays queen d1, which still maybe you shouldn't be playing this move because, like, I don't know what I would play if I would find any kind of decent solution for white. But queen d1 is obviously pretty bad for white. I mean, bishop g5 comes, which is what happened in the game. And after bishop g5, white either abandons the c3 pawn, abandons the rook, or plays what Gukesh did, which is the most natural move, rook c2. Just to show like how desperate the situation is for white. One of the engine's top suggestions is f takes e6, f takes e6, and knight to f5. Just giving a piece. And not even, it's not like white has a good evaluation here. It's like minus 3.5. But after bishop g5, it's already like minus 2.5. So from an objective point of view, I think we can confidently say that after bishop g5, it is a losing position. It's still It's still sharp, and there are adventures that happen in this game. It's not like the game is over. But objectively, already Gukesh has managed to find himself in a losing situation. So he played Rook C2. Of course, this is the kind of most natural move. You are still not losing material. White is keeping all the material. But if you look at White's pieces, the rook on c2 is only held together by the knight on d2. It cannot move from c2, and the knight on d4 cannot move from d4. The bishop on f2 cannot move because if it goes to g3, there's always bishop to e3 winning material. The bishop on g2 can technically go to f3, but I don't even know what it's doing there. White's rook on f1 is immobile. White's queen on e1, if it goes to e2, it's also surrendering the c3 pawn. And I don't even think that White wants a trade of queens. So White cannot move any pieces. The only idea White has is to play h4, but h4 can always be met with bishop to f4, and the bishop on f4 cannot be removed from that square, and it attacks e5. Which is why here, an absolutely devastating move is a very simple one. Simply castle and minus three, the engine says. Just minus three.
And this is a strong
White
engine
isn't.
that you're using, I would assume.
Yeah, a stronger engine. White is not down any material. And it's still dead lost, and Black does not have to do anything special for it. Castle, h4, bishop to f4. Again, White has no moves. Just like think about what su suggest a move to me. After bishop to f4, king h1. Yeah. Yeah, you can play king h1. Here, Black has various. Oh, with idea. Yeah, actually, bishop g1 is an idea. So I can play bishop to a4 here, which it's not the only good move, but. Pretty good one, and then rook to e2 to save the rook. Besides the fact that c3 is falling, there's also bishop to d1, and that's pretty sad.
Oof, that's nasty.
So,
Bishop d1 is nasty.
and now the reason why we played castle first was because if we had played bishop a4 instead of castle, then okay, White plays f takes e6 and gets a knight to e6 and sacks the rook, but Black's king is in the center. So, first we get our king into safety, and then we're ready for bishop to a4 because fe6 is not very dangerous with the king on g8. So castle would be absolutely devastating. This is where Ding starts to misplay a bit. So I said he basically played perfectly up until this point. It was like a flawless game, and his next move is not bad. It's still winning, but castle is basically like you cannot spoil it anymore if you make this one move. Now the move that he played keeps it sharp. Rook to c4. Gukesh plays h4. By the way, the idea of rook c4 is pretty obvious. So rook takes d4, followed by queen takes c2. So Gukesh plays h4, bishop to f4, and he makes the only move here, queen to b1, which protects the rook on c2. It leaves everything else hanging, but it does save the rook, so that's important. Ding plays the correct move. He takes on c3. Now, if he took on e5, then there would be rook takes b2, so you can't do that. So he takes on c3, of course, which does win a pawn. I think that when Ding played Rook C4,
He probably calculated this, right?
he had the sequence in mind, and it's a good sequence. But it's not as clean, and we'll see why. Rook takes C3, Queen takes C3, F takes E6, and this is where Ding makes, you could say, his one like real mistake in the game. There's only one real mistake, and it was at this moment after F takes E6. I wonder if, yeah, also. Like the chess.com engine also kind of shows it. For a strong engine, it's actually a very clear difference between two moves after fe6. He took with the pawn. It's on its surface the most natural move. I'll explain why it's not a good one. Now, if he had taken with the bishop, which is normally not what you want to do, it would actually be completely winning for black. And the reason why is because you need to keep the f-file closed. Now, it doesn't seem clear why you need to keep the F file closed, but it's obvious if we go to a few more moves down the road. Knight to e2, queen takes e5, knight f4, queen f4. And this is basically what we had in the game, except instead of the pawn e6, it's the bishop on e6. And now black is going to, at some point, remove the queen to f from f4 and then try to castle. Black is up two pawns, of course, so white has to do something. Now, white can play bishop to c5, trying to stop castling. Queen g4, now it's three pawns. And this is the difference between the game and this position. Here, black is completely winning because black is going to play f6, followed by king to f7 at some point, and the king will find safety. While in the game, with the f-file open, black's king would be stuck on e8. So it's still not a very clear explanation, I think, But basically, it's just that at this moment,
It's a long-term play, right?
yeah, it you have to see quite deep when you recapture with the bishop on e6, because it's not very logical, but it's based on this very concrete position that we also had in the game,
So you're a lot of
where
pawns down, but also you're having difficulties getting the rook into play. Like the king to safety and the rook in play. The rook on h8 is kind of stuck there. And the problem is that even ideas such as h5, rook h6 don't necessarily work with the f-file open because you get checkmated on f8. So it's always somewhat of a dangerous position for the king to be in, right?
Yeah. I mean, the position is simple in its essence. Its essence is black is just up a bunch of pawns
Right.
and has only one issue. The king is still on e8, which of course was sort of Ding's doing, because as we said, he played rook to c4, he didn't castle, and he has to now contend with this one downside of his position. Now, the downside is not enough for white to get compensation after bishop takes c6, because black has time to get the king to safety in that variation we saw.
Right.
But in the game, after he played f takes e6, now it's a different story. So fe6 is actually a huge mistake. Gukesh plays the only move, but at this point his play is forced. He has to play knight e2, queen takes e5, knight f4, queen f4. And now this is the difference. Gukesh has suddenly gotten back in the game. From -3, it is now back into territory where I would say, without having certainty, but I would say that it is objectively survivable. And I analyzed the position a bit and came to that conclusion. But he has only one move that he can survive with here, and he didn't make it. The move that he had to play after queen takes f4 is to sacrifice the third pawn, bishop c5, queen takes g4. And I actually, so he spent, let's see, according to what I see on chess.com, he spent about 6 minutes, yeah,
Six minutes,
on
yeah.
queen to c2, 6.5 minutes. And he played the move queen c2. So for sure he considered bishop c5, because bishop c5 is a forcing move. Black has only one reasonable move, which is queen takes g4. And it's also very close to just being good for white, because there is a move queen takes h7, right? And this move just wins on the spot, if not for one move, which I'm sure they both saw. I'm sure they both saw that white has this option of bishop c5, queen g4, queen h7, which of course wins if rook takes h7, mate in one. But can be met with the intermediate move. I guess, I don't know what this tactic is called, intermediate move or deflection, whatever you want to call it, queen to d4. Now, if king goes to h1, queen takes h4, and we're trading queens off, and black is going to be three pawns up in the endgame. And if bishop d4, rook h7, does no longer checkmate on f8, and again, black is up two pawns in an endgame and winning. But although I'm sure Gukesh saw this, I think he should have realized that the presence of such a tactic means that this position does have some richness in terms of white's potential counterplay. And after queen takes g4, white had two moves, which would keep him in fully in the game. One move is perhaps kind of weird. I find it weird. One move, I don't know if it's weird or not, but I think it's kind of normal. So one move is rook to f3. Now, the move is weird in the sense that the
This
rook looks.
looks very unnatural to me. It looks
Yeah,
like
it
a
looks
weird move
unnatural.
to
On
me.
the other hand, I am threatening rook takes a3. I mean, that's a very strong idea. And if you play knight to c4, again, I don't have queen h7, unfortunately. Same reason as before. But I do have queen to f1, and now I'm threatening checkmate in a different way. And if you start to see things like this, I think you can get relatively confident that white is back in the game. Black should stop checkmate.
It's somewhat of a chain combination or a chain tactical idea, right? Because you see rook f3, maybe if you stop after knight c4, you're thinking, okay, rook f3 didn't really improve my case because, in fact, that knight on b2 is now better placed on c4. It's closer to the center. Now maybe I have ideas of e5 as well. If you continue, obviously, with queen f1, then you start understanding that you're starting to, have checkmating threats. But at the same time, it feels like it's a chain reaction that you need to see in order to spot this rook f3.
No, without queen f1, the move does not really make much sense. On the other hand, it's not like we're going 20 moves deep. It's two moves, right? I mean, like you have to see, I mean, you have to see a few moves deep here to survive. Like you're in serious danger with white, right? You're down two pawns. You're not going to solve this position with one move. So It's not even like two moves that clarify things, right? Queen f1, it's just you start to feel good about yourself because, okay, I'm creating threats. King d8, black stops the checkmate. And here, white still has to find the third important move, which is queen to f2, which is preparing ideas of bishop to b6 somewhere, also defending the h4 pawn. But most importantly, once I think you see this move, queen to f2, it becomes clear that black does not have clear moves, like a clear response. Like basically, the way I would kind of try to process this position is that, like, okay, rook f3 doesn't lead to clarity. Queen to f1, still, it threatens checkmate, but doesn't lead to clarity. But after queen to f2, I start to think, what's my opponent's next move? So the past moves were easy for black. Knight c4, defends a3, king
Maybe
d8,
rook
stops
e8.
checkmate.
I don't know,
But
rook
after
e8,
queen to f8, I
maybe.
don't see clear move. Yeah, rook to e8, it's a move. I mean, again, black has ideas, white has ideas of bishop to b6, that's one thing, which is already equal. There's also rook to f7. But rook to e8 is not a move which threatens white. So at this point, black is no longer has active ideas. White has managed to find a formation which is both kind of threatening in the sense that bishop b6 is there, and also defensive in the sense that black's ideas are limited. And so rook to f3 was one good option. By the way, there is a very critical line after rook to f3, which is that black has this really, really dangerous move, b6. Which is maybe also not a move that people even consider. But the point is bishop b6 is met by knight c4, and then knight to d2 comes. After b6, white now plays queen h7. Here it works. Again, the queen is, of course, immune. Queen to d4 is the only move. Bishop d4, rook takes h7, and now the point of rook to f3, rook takes a3. And this position is objectively a drawn endgame. Computer gives, like, basically 0.00. So I do want to stress that Ding would not be in any danger. Although the position looks sharp, Ding would have various ways to bail out here. But still, I mean, at this point, White was losing a few moves before. Draw is a good outcome.
This is
Now,
great.
another move I. Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is great, of course. I mean, Gukesh wants to survive the game at this point. Another move, which I like on move 31, instead of rook to f3, is a move queen to c2. Now, the computer prefers rook f3. But it says both moves are acceptable. Like rook to f3 is basically minus 0.2, basically going towards equality. And queen to c2 is minus 0.5. In this type of position, minus 0.5 is not necessarily so meaningful. I think after queen c2, most likely knight to c4 is played. Because the knight anyway, it's not like what is black doing? The king can't get to safety, right? The king is stuck on e8. You can't play rook to f8. So you basically just have to get your knight back into the game. Knight c4 with the idea of b6, right? Very clear. And queen c2 had the same idea in some ways as rook to f3. The queen needs to get to f2. Queen to f2 here. Stopping b6, preparing queen f7, so on. Same idea, right? You're trying to use the f-file for your attack. King to d8, we see the same kind of parallels. And here after king d8, bishop b6, knight b6, queen b6. Again, black is not in danger because white is just trying to repeat moves, king e7, queen c5, and so on. And if the king goes to e8, white makes this one last move, difficult move, queen d6. And with the queen on d6, black cannot really free himself. You can't play rook to f8. There's queen to b8 ideas, and somehow it's probably a draw. Like queen d4, rook f2. Black just doesn't have active ideas. Of course, black is not in any risk whatsoever. White is just trying to kind of hold the balance. But we're kind of slowly going into a territory where most likely black is not able to win this game. In fact, like the computer already shows minus 0.2, which is, we would say, probably a draw, right? From an objective point of view. Of course,
Yes.
it's still very sharp. So I think if Gukesh had played bishop c5, queen g4, and had considered either rook f3 or queen c2, I'm not sure if he considered either move. I think if he had, perhaps he would have found this and survived the game. I think maybe his thought process was based around queen takes h7. He was trying to make that work. It wasn't working out, and he kind of rejected bishop to c5. That's my assumption, but again, I don't have insight into his thought process. But the move he played is just a bad move. I mean, like I can understand why he didn't see that bishop c5 is good, But I can't understand what he was hoping for with Queen C2 as he played. So yeah, here Ding still cannot castle Bishop C5, that's obvious, but he made the most obvious move, Queen C4. A trade of queens is losing for white for obvious reasons. Black's king is no longer weak in the endgame. And Queen to D2, as Gukesh played, now Black's king is castled. So yeah, Queen C2, I understand that he maybe thought he was already losing. I still don't understand why you would go Queen C2. Just maybe some panic. I
I
mean,
feel
it
this
can
is
happen.
one of those moments when you go into a deep calculation, you try to figure things out, you try to keep the king in the center. You see that you're losing the pawn on g4, and then you start panicking, right? Because you don't see rook f3, queen f1 ideas. Maybe he did see rook f3, queen f1, but did not see queen to f2. You can speculate on where he,
I
let's
don't
say,
think so, because
lost the threat, right?
I think basically if Black's king is on d8, you don't even
You just go
that's
for
good
it.
enough.
You just go
Yeah,
for it.
just go for it. The king is on d8. It's okay. We'll try to fight from there. I mean, maybe it's still losing. It turns out it's not, but that's not obvious. Maybe it's losing, maybe not. Even if White doesn't find queen f2 there, it's better than what he did in the game.
Maybe
Because
he
still the king is on d8
refused,
at least.
and maybe he refused to realize that his situation is so dire, and perhaps he got somewhat tempted by the idea of getting the bishop on d4 as he did in the game, even though the bishop on d4 is getting dislodged very, very quickly. So,
Yeah,
tough to
that's
make a
probably
very
true.
clear case of why he chose this.
No, I mean, again, it's not obvious. I mean, it's true that what he okay, let's go to see what he did in the game. So Queen C4, Queen D2, castle, Bishop D4, as you mentioned, the bishop goes to D4. And yeah, White does have some counterplay ideas now, right? Like there's rook takes f8, Queen F4 ideas. And if rook takes F1, Bishop F1, White continues to gain time on the queen and is actually doing fine here. So that's why Ding played knight to d3, which is the best move. It's possible that he saw this position after knight d3, queen e3, and thought, like vaguely, okay, it's not so clear because still the knight on d3 is misplaced, bishop on d4. I mean, once you get here, I think you immediately see what Ding played because it just like immediately screams out to me, which was rook takes f1, bishop f1, and e5. But it is possible in preliminary calculations, since we are going down a line of like four or five moves, it is possible to stop after bishop f1 and to miss e5. But e5, well, like once you get here, e5 is just, right, you see it in a second. I
Screams to
mean,
be played, yes.
yeah. Because bishop d3, queen d4, it's like very forcing. And if bishop e5, just queen g4 with check. So you kind of solve all your problems. And now that the bishop on e5 is hanging, things are falling apart for white. This is exactly what happened. Bishop g2. Now, again, if black even wants to take on e5, it is winning, but Ding was really clinical at this. Like up until the end of the game, I don't know if it was a difficult task. I wouldn't say he did anything like super difficult or anything, but still, he was very clinical and it is quite commendable for us. So bishop to f5, with the idea of bishop to e4, bishop g3, saving the bishop to e4. Anyway, like a trade, all trades of pieces are good for black, and the only thing that you need to avoid is that white gets the queen active. Like that's all black has to stop. So bishop to e4, king to h2. Now Ding made not a necessary move, but quite a nice one. h6, just giving the king a bit of lift, because
I love it. I
if
love
the
it.
king were checked on g8 and it goes to f7, then that's a lot of counterplay for white. But with the king on h7, there are no more checks ever, right?
Yeah,
Bishop to h3, of course.
at this point, I feel the position is already simplified quite a lot, and
Oh yeah.
most likely none of the players thought that there's any chances for white.
No, I mean, I think that after e5, the writing is fully on the wall. It's over. There's nothing that White can hope for. Gukesh knew he was losing. Ding knew the game was over as well. Still, you have to make the accurate moves, and h6 is a good one. It's not the only winning move, but yeah, it's a very good move. Just the king on h7 is very safe. Bishop to h3. At least Gukesh wanted to keep the bishops for some hope in the position. Queen to d1, threatening checkmate. Bishop d6, stopping checkmate. Everything wins at this point. Queen to c2, king to g3, queen takes a2, third pawn.
And what a pawn.
And
What a
yeah,
pawn.
like the problem is that, of course, white has no counterplay. The king on h7 is just so safe. If queen to b6, for example, queen to e2, Queen to d8, king to h7, no more checks, and black is also checkmating. So this is game over. And Gukesh played bishop to e6, one last check, which is based on like one final simple trick, which is king to h7. Would be quite sad. Of course, both these players saw this in advance, so they were, but it would be quite a sad finish because after queen takes e4 with check, d takes e4, bishop a2, white has won the piece. But only enough for a draw. White is not winning this position. But still, a draw is very good. King to h8, and Gukesh resigned because of course queen takes e4 is not met with d takes e4, but queen to f2 check, and that's it. So after king h8, he has no more ideas. Black is up three pawns. Black is going to just move the queen next, a2, a1, and therefore Gukesh resigned.
Yeah, obviously, a shocking result, I would say, starting with a bang for Ding. Obviously, this is a huge boost for him. I believe it is the first game of classical chess that he has won since perhaps early in the year at Tat Steel, where he defeated, in fact, Gukesh and Warmerdam. So it's been a
Yeah, his last
while.
win was against Warmerdam. Ironically, his win previously was against Gukesh with the black pieces. And kind of a similar game to this. Like, basically, he got a good position out of the opening, and then he won.
This sets up the table and sets this match on a very different trajectory than what a lot of people have anticipated going into the first game. How do you see this one for Gukesh at this point? What do you think the discussions look like within his camp after this start?
I mean, obviously not ideal. I mean, nobody wants to lose a white. I really doubt that they're in any sort of panic mode because it's the first game. I mean, this is a very long match. It would be shocking if nothing happens. Like, if Gukesh doesn't get quite a few significant chances throughout the match. And I would also be shocked if Ding does not get quite a few significant chances throughout the match. Now, it's probably quite annoying for Gukesh that he's playing someone who's at least from the first game playing pretty well, rather than if you looked at Ding throughout the year from February until his last tournament, which was the Olympiad, which ended what in
I
was
think
a
minus.
end of September. Yeah,
Right.
like that period of 7 months where, yeah, you could legitimately say probably Gukesh is playing a few hundred points below his usual level. Like Norway chess, the thing is, people see tournaments like Norway chess, they see the Weisenhaus Fischer Random tournament that he played. They see some various other things like Grenke, and then they get this idea that Gukesh is finished. I mean, when I saw him playing in Norway chess, like this is where most of the talk was, that like that Ding is finished, right? And it's hard to ignore that talk because he was blundering like mating two, right, against Magnus. He was losing all his games. He was losing with the white pieces from the opening against Hikaru. And then all that talk starts. But I think we did say this on more than one occasion, perhaps, that the World Championship match is just different. It's just a different story. And we shouldn't ignore how format can change, how mood can change things. And Ding having a clear goal here in a format that he's familiar with against a player who he historically has pretty good results against, although limited results. I mean, very few games, but still good results against. Like, he knows what it feels like to beat Gukesh. And he has a clear goal in mind. He even perhaps has good memories because he's, back working with Richie, repeat of 1 year ago, 1 year and 6 months ago, let's say, winning the World Championship match for the first time against Jan. So things have changed. It's not the same Ding who was playing Norway chess and was getting beaten up and was a target and everyone wanted to beat him. And then you start to feel yourself like you're a target, you start to feel like you're the punching bag. While in a World Championship match, as long as he doesn't start, losing out right out of the gate, then he doesn't have those feelings anymore.
And I
Right. think Magnus also said it. Like for Ding, it's important. You get off to a reasonable start. I mean, if you get off to a bad start, yeah, maybe your emotions just totally flip. For Ding, it was very important. He gets off to a good start. For Gukesh, of course, it's not good. But I guess he has the mentality that this shouldn't affect him, his play going forward, right? He
Right.
should still look to the future with some kind of reasonable confidence. Hopefully that he plays at a, hopefully for him, obviously, not for Ding. Hopefully for Gukesh that he plays at a higher level, because the first game looked nervy and overall White's play was rather poor. I think like two moves are just rather, like, I would say not at a player of his level, not even close. Rook A to C1 and Queen to C2. Both those moves are like critical moments, I would say. Especially Queen to C2 is a critical moment. Like after Queen takes F4, basically you're going to get bad positions in every event that you play. It is inevitable for every player. And once you get that chance that you can fight on, and move 30 is just such a clear example of a chance where you can fight on. Like you're given this opportunity by Ding playing F takes C6. You need to take it. It's just like defensive abilities are going to save you a lot of points. We know that from everyone, right? Like you see how many points are saved by Alireza, by Hikaru, by Magnus, by even by Gukesh in the candidates, who was defending some dangerous positions that he had. You need to defend bad positions. And today he just wasn't able to do so. So two poor moments, but it doesn't mean the end of the match or anything, obviously. I mean,
No, of
not
course
even
not.
close.
Of course not.
I would still say like it's a close match. It was probably going to be a close match before the match started. It is even more clear now that it's going to be a close match. I do not expect a Gukesh collapse by any means, and I don't, at this point, I don't expect a Ding collapse. This was kind of the possibility, right? That Ding could collapse. Not
And
that we were expecting it, but it can happen when a player has shown bad form over a long period of time.
one thing about Ding that he has showed this last year, and the bad form that we were discussing, and everybody pretty much was discussing, was especially prominent whenever it was coming to the last few minutes of the game, maybe the last few minutes of the first time trouble. He was making inexcusable mistakes. Very, very often, we've seen it against Nodirbek. We've seen it against, I'm trying to remember, Iran at the Olympiad, where he got
Arham.
Parham. He got winning positions, and he wasn't able to convert them. Now, I was going to say that I'm starting to see hints of that in his play, especially when he did not castle in this particular game and allowed the lines that you were showing with Rook F3, Queen F1, and so on and so forth. Like, he gave Gukesh chances throughout the game. Now, this is a positive that Gukesh can take away and discuss and try to implement in the next few games whenever he's going to find himself in trouble. There are still hints of rustiness from Ding, but one thing that he flipped the script on was his general mental state. And I feel this has been discussed quite a lot. It never, for the past 1 year, looked like Ding was having fun playing chess. And finally, going into this one, even before the first game, you could see Ding, he was kind of in a jovial mood. Like, he was smiling, giving interviews, looked quite relaxed, looked healthy, which is also, I think, extremely important. So it felt like he flipped the script on his head, and now the pressure is on Gukesh. Even coming into this first round, it felt like the pressure was not necessarily on Ding, but on Gukesh to prove that, to prove the expectations that he will dominate this match. Let's just be frank, a lot of people were seeing it as a potential massacre. Now, this is obviously not going to happen, as you just mentioned, including myself,
Well,
by the
okay,
way.
but we shouldn't say it can't happen. I mean, obviously, it could still be a massacre. Like Gukesh could win a bunch of games in a row, right? Although it doesn't seem likely.
Right.
But yeah, that's very unlikely. I mean, obviously, Ding, even though there were moments to be critical, like of course I did criticize some of his moves, rook c4, as you mentioned, f takes c6. Overall, it was a good game. And the moves that we could be critical about, like rook to c4, I think here's the thing. Ding is a player who plays quickly. Now, generally speaking, he plays quickly. I've noticed this. He doesn't want to get into time trouble. I think this is probably a conscious decision. Even in Norway chess, at some point he just stopped. He was just like playing very quickly. Once he gets to that like 30 to 20 minute point, he tries not to get into, like, he doesn't take a 15 minute think. Rook to c4 was played instantly, pretty much. Now,
It's a very
this
tempting
is a
decision
bit.
because you are winning a pawn by force, pretty much.
This is where like he was in flow. I'm not going to be critical because now there are possibilities where playing quickly and you play a superficial move and it costs you half a point, right? This can happen. On the other hand, there are also times when you think too much over what's basically a simple decision, and it also costs you half a point because you get into time trouble. Now, if someone plays a pretty decent move very quickly, I'm not going to be critical because it's some sort of decision, which it might not work, it might work, but it's not a bad decision, in its essence, right? You're playing a decent move quickly. It can also work very well sometimes. Now, f takes e6, which he thought about for a few minutes, which ended up being a mistake. It's also a pretty tough decision. I mean, I don't think it's easy by any means. It's a mistake. It's even a mistake which turns probably a 0-1 into a half point from an objective point of view, but it's a tough one. So Ding did nothing like very egregious or wrong in this game. It was a good game. It was a 2800 level game. Gukesh did make decisions that I think were egregiously bad. Both rook a to c1 and queen to c2, in my opinion, are mistakes that, if I'm going to put a level to them, I would put them at the 2600 level. Now, obviously, the whole game, I'm not going to say that he played like a 2600, but these are mistakes that you would expect a player who is not 2800 to make. So that's I'm just trying to categorize like different types of mistakes in chess because there are differences between moves which, like, for to my understanding, are different than what the computer's numbers always show.
Yeah, cool. All
Now,
right. Go ahead. Did you have something
no,
else
I think
to add?
it's like here's the thing. Like when I think about how I would approach a match from both sides, I'm thinking like if I'm Gukesh, I see that I'm a very hot player. I've been having some tremendous results at Olympiad. I won the candidates, this and that. I tied for first in Tata Steel. And I'm playing against this guy who mostly his results have been negative. But how does that help me? Like when I actually sit down across the board from this guy, and I know that he can play well and he can also sometimes play better than me. Like, how does that possibly help me? So I don't know if that's if I'm in Gukesh's place, I'm not feeling like super confident. And even if I am feeling super confident, that doesn't I don't know if that's going to be a good sign for me. I might think, should I be confident? Like, should I be happy that I'm playing Ding and not, for example, Hikaru or Arjun, Alireza, so on and so forth? Like, why should I be especially happy that it's Ding sitting across from me than someone else? If I were in Gukesh's place, I wouldn't suddenly think, oh, it's not like let's say I'm sitting across from, give me a 2680 player. And I'm basically feeling like my chances of winning the match are upwards of 95%. And although maybe Ding's performance in the last year has been less than 2680, I'm feeling much worse against Ding than against a 2680 player.
Of course, of
And
course.
I'm
Because
probably also feeling worse.
you know that Ding can perform at the 2800 level.
Yeah, I know that Ding, even though it might be hard to understand for people, like, yes, if you look at his results last year, he is performing much worse than for example, Vidit. He is performing worse than Ray Robson, who I'm not trying to like criticize players. All these guys, Vidit, Ray, they're all great players. But if you told me who do you have a better chance against, Ding, Vidit, or Ray, or Anish, I'm probably thinking that the most difficult opponent among those groups of players is Ding. They're all going to be difficult, but the most difficult will probably be Ding. And yes, it is possible that Ding has a bad event and he plays badly and he loses badly. But yeah, looking at the first game, it doesn't seem to be the case. And what I'm expecting is that we're most likely seeing, maybe not like, Ding at his best, but certainly Ding at his very good, which is a 27 high 2700s to 2800 player. Although I'm not going to read too much into the first game, but I'm also happy that Ding is, at least from the first glance, playing well, and it's going to be an exciting match.
Cool. Well, Fabi, as usual, extremely informative analysis. If I dare to say, one of the most informative analyses of this game. So thanks for sharing that with us and with the viewers. So that's it. Tomorrow, most likely, Ding is going to have the white pieces. What do you expect from him tomorrow? What do you expect from Gyokyash as well? Just the first couple of moves. I'm not asking about any sort of strategies. I just want to get your expectation in terms of opening choice.
Yeah, so okay, from Ding, I think he might be varying the like normally Ding is a d4 player. He's always been a d4 player and he's dabbled a lot in c4, but closed openings. Now, I would think that he's probably also prepared e4 to some extent. And it's probably smart to do so. And he did play e4 against Gyokyash in the Siegfried Cup. It was an Italian. And he probably should be varying his openings because you're not going to create many chances if you just keep playing d4, d4, d4. It's really hard these days to create chances in the opening, and you kind of have to move around and vary and try to feel your opponent's weaknesses out a bit. So I don't know. I think probably for the first game we won't see e4, but I would expect in general Ding to be a bit versatile in his opening choices. And for Gyokyash, I think that he should be aiming for a fight with Black. Like these are the days where, with enough preparation, you can get a fight if you want, and it can also be a safe fight, like a controlled. Like you don't have to play the
The
Leningrad
dragon,
Dutch, for example. It's not that's not what I mean,
the Dutch,
but
yes.
you can prepare something a bit rare where you get chances, and I would think that Gyokyash, who has pre been preparing very seriously for the last few months, probably has some ideas up his sleeve. On the other hand, maybe he also just plays like boring stuff. Like you can also prepare stuff that just forces a draw with Black, as we talked about. Like, there's d4, d5, c4, c5, just trying to trade off all the pawns. I hope that we get something more exciting. I was kind of predicting openings last time around, and I think I did a decent job. Like, I had a feeling when Ding would play the Nimzo. I just like had a feeling against Jan. So, I don't know. What's my prediction for tomorrow in terms of opening?
Nimzo, if Ding starts with d4, let's say, as you just mentioned, that probably he's going to vary, but most likely he's going to start with what he's most comfortable with, and that is d4, closed openings. What do you expect if Ding starts with d4 from Gyokyash?
Yeah, Gyokyash has been playing like QGA sometimes, but also knight of 6 c4 e6. He does play a lot. Not much of a Grünfeld player.
I want to see a Grünfeld. I'm hoping to see a
I don't think so.
Grünfeld. We're probably not going
I
to see a
just,
Grünfeld.
I don't know. It's a bit out of fashion, but it's possible. But it's a bit out of fashion. People don't like the Grünfeld these days, for whatever reason.
No, I agree. Cool.
So I don't know. I'll just predict c4 in the first move. Why
Perfect.
not?
Perfect. 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 Cool. All right. Well, Fabi, once again, thanks very much. If you guys
Thank you.
enjoy this, don't forget, like, subscribe, all the good stuff. We will have a new set of merch coming up sometimes during this World Championship match, so keep an eye out for that. But I think you guys will like it. Anyway, see you guys in the next episode. Bye bye bye.